You're listening to a feed of the Association of Music Podcasting at musicpodcasting.org.
I'm Irk, and welcome to episode 190 of Irk FM. Irk FM brings you great quality, independent and unsigned music down the pipes and into your ears each and every Friday on channel Irk and Tracks Radio. And on this very special interview, we're about to speak to a man who's about to go on a bit of a tour, it seems. I'm talking with currently Sydney signer Franz Arp, who we've had on Irk FM and also across channel Irk. G'day Franz, how are you going?
I'm good, mate. How are you doing?
Absolutely super. For anyone who hasn't heard your music, how would you describe it?
That's always a good question to start with and complicated to answer. I've been saying kind of like David Bowie, just because I think that kind of, I don't think I really sound that much like David Bowie, but I think I have been getting a lot of those comparisons lately, and that's kind of seems to be easier than narrowing down the genre. So I think I'll say Bowie rock.
Bowie rock, or
Bowie pop, maybe. That's not bad. I like that.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Now, I remember the very first time that I saw you, it was at an Emma Dean show at El Rocco, and I thought that you were in serious danger of losing your head on a fan.
Oh, no, yes, right. Was that when I was jumping on tables and stuff?
Yes.
Right, yes. I do tend to do some odd stuff like that once in a while. And, it's lucky I kept my clothes on, really. No, I don't I don't take my clothes off in general. I do tend to kind of just shoot my mouth off a little bit. And, usually it's okay. I did get asked to... I played a gig up in Byron Bay the other day, and I did get asked to shut up at one point, but that's all right. I didn't expect that from Byron Bay, but it happens sometimes.
That first night that we saw you, tell us about that night, just to fill the listeners in, why you were actually there, because we know why Emma was there.
Yeah, it was a show that Emma Dean was doing, and she asked me to come along, and the show that she was doing had her changing costumes a couple of times, and it was going to take a few minutes, and instead of people sitting around waiting for her to change costumes, she asked me to come along and just play a little thing in between to cover the changes up and stuff like that. So I ended up just kind of wandering around the audience and playing whatever I felt like, and doing random things like jumping on tables. And I think, was it that week that I did the weird Ness and Dorma cover with my ukulele and things like that? It was all on ukulele anyway.
I think so. That was the night where my mum, Judy, and I were in the audience for her 60th.
Oh, yeah.
She was waving a candle on the that was on the table. She was waving that as if she was at a Bon Jovi concert.
Right.
And I was waving my phone around, and you saw on the front of my phone, you've got a monkey on the front of your phone.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You're nice. And why do you have a monkey on the front of your phone?
That was my program that I used to put out my newsletters, MailChimp.
Right. Oh, MailChimp. Oh, yes. There you go. I understand now. It was a bit random at the time.
Yes, it was a bit random. But since then, we've seen you at a couple of other performances with Emma, but we haven't seen you yet in your own show, but hopefully we'll be changing that very shortly.
Yes, well, hopefully so.
Because you're about to take off, or actually, you're actually in the middle, as we're recording this, you're actually in the middle of a tour.
Oh, well, I actually just did a kind of just did a little tour where I had a gig in Sydney towards the end of September, and then I had a bunch of dates in Brisbane and Byron Bay and around the place kind of a few weeks ago. And then this one is kind of a nice little additional date that came up where a good friend of mine, Mr. Dan Ackfield, is coming down from Brisbane to do a show. So I'm just jumping on the bill with him, and it should be a really wonderful night, because he's got a fantastic voice and he's a fantastic songwriter. So it should be great.
So if you're in Sydney and you're listening relatively soon after this comes out, you will be where and when will you be?
Oh, we'll be at the Lansdowne Hotel, which is on Broadway. And I'm on it. It's an early one. I'm on at 6 o'clock, and then Dan's on after me, and then I forgot the name of the third chap that's on. That's very unprofessional of me. Let me have a quick look.
Luke Cleland?
Yes, that's the one. Yes. Luke Cleland is playing final. I don't know Luke, unfortunately, but I'm sure he'll be fantastic also.
And you'll know him after Sunday the 6th of November.
I will know him. I will know him after that point, yes. Very good point. And hopefully many of you will.
Yes,
many.
Indeed. So why don't we go back a step? How did you get into music in the first place?
I grew up in a bit of a musical family, as many people do. When I was a youngster, I used to play drums. Started playing drums in my dad's ballroom dancing band when I was 11 years old, and from then on I kind of I learned piano early on and started playing guitar when I was, you know, like everybody starts playing guitar when they're about kind of 13 or 14 or something like that in general, I blossomed from there into the musical wonder I am today, of course. You know, I think we had a little bit of a unique childhood experience, because I grew up on a farm that was out in the middle of Queensland. So it was that's kind of always been something that I think has coloured my views on music and the way I write lyrics and the things I think about and all that sort of stuff.
Was there any pressure being in a musical family to become a musician yourself? Any pressure?
Oh, no. We were all pretty much one of the greatest things about my family is that we've always been encouraged to do whatever we wanted to do, and I'm certainly the only one that's very much gone down the musical path, and everybody else in my family plays music and stuff, which is great. They've all done other things with their lives and are all very wealthy and happy, which is a nice thing for them.
Yeah. Was there any a time where you didn't want to become a musician? You wanted to, you know, like be a fireman or an astronaut or anything like that?
Fireman or an astronaut. I'm sure there was probably at some point when I was a little kid that possibly I wanted to be a fireman or an astronaut or something like that. But I have wanted to be, from the time when I actually could make a decision to go forward with it, I have always wanted to be a musician and have always wanted to pursue that area in general. And I also also work as an audio engineer, so that's been the very small variation on that, really, is that I work as an audio engineer and as well as being a musician.
Do you remember what was the first song you learned how to play on guitar?
The first song? I learned all of these songs on guitar that were, I think they were all like Metallica and Guns N' Roses songs, because that was the only thing that, well, one of the things that stopped me from getting beaten up when I was in high school, I think. So just because I could sit around and people would request, everybody in my school, because it was a very small school, so they all listened to Metallica and Guns N' Roses, so if I could pull out, like, you know, Welcome to the Jungle or Enter Sandman or things like that, then everybody was happy and left me alone.
So when did you decide to pursue it as a career, as something that you really wanted to do?
when I realised that playing music stopped me from getting beaten up.
Yeah.
I think. Something like that. I think it's always been kind of the main thing I've ever been interested in, really, in a really serious way. Like I've just not really ever had another interest. Really, I don't have a lot of hobbies. I watch some movies and things like that, but I pretty much just do music all the time. So that's kind of my thing.
Have you had any formal training?
I got piano lessons when I was a youngster, until I was kind of 12 or something like that. And then I haven't really had any instrument lessons so much. I went to the Conservatorium of Music in Brisbane, but I studied audio engineering there. I've had a couple of short stints with kind of vocal tutors. And it was mostly because I was concerned I was messing myself up more than anything else. But it was nice to know that I was not significantly messing myself up. Or I know the things that I would possibly do that would mess myself up in the long term. So I kind of know a bit more about controlling myself. But aside from that, I've never been like a vocal student or a guitar student or anything like that per se.
Have you been in? Done the usual thing, you know, left school, done whatever you've done, joined bands and all that sort of thing until you're at the stage you're at now?
Oh, kind of. I've never really played in any other bands or anything. I've always kind of just done my own songwriting stuff, and I play with other musicians once in a while, but I've never been a part of anybody else's band or anything like that. Just has never really worked out that way. I've always been more interested in the writing part of it than prancing around on stage as a member of a band. I do play ukulele in a band in Sydney for this for a wonderful songwriter called Susie Connolly, and so I've been playing ukulele with her a bit. I think her band is about to change and become something different again. So the ukulele might not get a look in anymore, unfortunately. Aside from that, I haven't really played in bands. It's mostly just been doing my own thing.
So when it comes to the guitar versus the ukulele, I'm only very new at learning the guitar, and I haven't really touched it since I've been back. It's been a bit hectic. What would be the main differences, apart from the obvious size factor, between the two for you?
I don't know. Well, the tuning's different, of course. But the main reason I kind of went for it to start off with was just because it was a bit of a joke. I was trying to play that because I'm quite a tall man. I'm 6'3" kind of thing. So when I play on stage with the ukulele, it's the smallest sized ukulele you can get. So I was kind of going for this to start off with. I was going for a bit of a joke, and just playing the card of like, hey, I'm a big man with a little guitar. Isn't that funny? Since then I've kind of done it a few times, and a lot of people have really taken to it, which has weirded me out a little bit. So it's turned into a bit of a thing, and without me really thinking about it very much. And especially because I actually find playing ukulele kind of reasonably easy, and the arrangements I do for it are always kind of a bit odd, like that Radiohead arrangement that I did for a Paranoid Android, I should say, and then several others, including the cover of that Gautier song that I did recently, and it seems to have been pretty popular on YouTube and stuff. So it's I think just because I play it a little bit oddly, people seem to be interested in it, and it is really fun as well. I do quite enjoy it now.
So it wasn't a deliberate thing of, okay, let's add another string to my bow. I'm going to be a funny man as well as a serious musician.
Oh, no, not really. I think I've always just kind of ranted a bit in between songs and stuff like that, and just done odd things, really. Like, I quite enjoy just doing odd things. It's not really about kind of getting up and being the funny guy. I kind of just like doing odd stuff. And yeah, again, like, when I first started, it kind of you know, I was supposed to be, like, I think I started off playing a cover on it of Bohemian Rhapsody. And it was, you know, it was supposed to be a bit of a joke, but it was still supposed to be kind of, you know, actually well done kind of thing. So it's not like I was getting up to be funny, I guess. It's just supposed to be kind of weird. And yeah, I think it was kind of weird. And it continues to be kind of weird, but except that people, now that people kind of expect it, it's funny how there's just like this ridiculous number of people that play ukulele in the world. And as soon as you you don't really know who they are, and then as soon as you pull it out and start playing, they all are suddenly there and asking me for advice on how to play better and things like that. It's just like, it's all very strange. It's great that I've kind of tapped into this little world that I didn't really know existed. There's all these like crazy ukulele orchestras everywhere. I didn't even think that was a possibility, but there's ukulele orchestras.
Yeah, there's one actually near me out west, the Blue Mountains Ukulele Club.
No, really?
They play, I think it's once a month on a Saturday afternoon at one of our local pubs out here out west.
Right,
as
really?
As well as up the mountains, and there's a whole heap of them with their ukuleles playing different songs and that sort of thing. So
yeah, that's really cool. I've been thinking that maybe I should do like this. Maybe I should do like a some kind of weird tour where I play with all these different ukulele orchestras or something, because that would be kind of fun. But I don't know how it would work. I don't think I have no idea how it could possibly work. And but because I know of quite a few in Brisbane now as well. But it's yeah, it would be fun to kind of interact with all those nice folk a bit more. But yeah. Oh, and I did this thing. I'd love to revisit this thing I did a couple of years ago where I was playing ukulele and a friend of mine in Brisbane was playing clarinet, and it was just such a wonderfully bizarre interpretation of all the music that I'd written on these two instruments. So it was it was great.
And of course, it's a lot easier to take a ukulele around to a show or in a state or whatever compared to a guitar.
Yeah, I actually just recently though I took it onto Virgin, and Virgin now have a rule where you can't take any string instrument on board their flights, apparently. Oh, well, wow. That's what this girl was telling me. And so I'm standing there with this ukulele in the airport, just going like, "It's a ukulele. How dangerous can it be? It's a freaking ukulele." And she eventually kind of, you know, I belittled her into letting me on board with her, but it was just ridiculous. And it's probably more based on, the insurance thing or something, you know, if something gets damaged when it's in the flight and then they're liable or blah, 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 something. I can't believe that a terrorist would be taking over an airplane with a violin, for example.
I thought it might have been more to do with the damages, because we know that Emma had some problems with the violin.
Well, that's true. And I think it's probably stories like that that has caused the crackdown. And I know Qantas recently changed all their flight rules and luggage rules and things like that. So, yeah, so it's probably stuff like that, I'd say.
So apart from not being able to take ukuleles on planes, what else inspires you when it comes to songwriting?
Turmoil like that. Well, just everything, really. I've always tried to develop this thing where I'm just constantly writing all the time. So instead of sitting down and, you know, once a week or something, sitting down and trying to scratch a song out, pretty much just I'm just wandering around all the time with a book in my bag, and if I think of something, and I just scratch it down, and so I just end up with pages and pages of illegible craziness, and then I tend to whittle it down from there, and of course, you know, some of the sometimes it is like a wholly formed story or something like that, but I guess I focus on darker stuff a lot. Like a lot of my songs tend to be about the feelings of being alone or ending some kind of suicide or just, you know, it's just the darker feelings of life, I suppose. Because that's stuff that resonates with me a lot more.
And unfortunately, recently you were saying on Facebook that you lost a book.
I did lose a book. I left it out at this very odd little show that I actually did do a gig at Liverpool recently. So I do some little shows in pubs, little cover shows in pubs once in a while because it helped me pay my rent. And I did this gig out at Liverpool and left the bag in the pub, so I've still got to get in touch with them. But yeah, the other wonderful thing about that gig was this this very, very drunk little man came up to me through the set and started very, very emotionally telling me how much he loved me, and grabbing my face and shaking my head around, and he was crying and tears falling down his face, and just saying, I love you so much, not in a homosexual way, but I just love you so much, and he was just so emotional, and it definitely walked the line between being very touching and just very strange. So maybe that just shook me up in a way that I just forgot my bag, left it there somewhere.
How many beers do you think he had by that stage?
Well, I don't know. I personally don't break down like that until I've downed at least a good portion of the bottle of wine, you know. So I would think he'd had a few. And he certainly had a few more in the time that he was sitting there watching. I'd say he was in for a rip-roaring evening. Slash maybe he just passed out somewhere. But he was a nice man. He was a nice, very, very emotional man. And it's always nice to have such a distinct reaction with somebody.
Any other strange audience members that you've had, like any like 60-year-old women or anything like that?
Are you asking me something about your mum?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I can't really remember what your mum did, I have to admit. I can remember your mum kind of said some stuff to me once.
Yeah.
But I can't remember what she said now. What did she say to me?
Oh, she thinks that you're quite welcome to park your shoes under her bed any time.
Oh, that's right. That old sauce bag. Jeez Louise. Hold me back. Hold me back. yes, well, you know.
She's only human.
Oh, she's only human. I mean, what can I say? What can I say? Have you seen this action? It's hard to deny. And, you know, advances are always welcome. Be they from anywhere. So bring it on, I say.
Hello, Studio V. No, it's good to see like a room full of people sort of all reacting well, and you know,
yeah.
And even if they have, you know, do some strange things, you know, it's all good.
Oh, I encourage the strange things. I think it's wonderful. I always like to interact with everybody on the stage. That's one of the reasons that. More the reason that I get up to, like, I don't really care about being funny so much, but I really love getting up on stage and getting everybody involved and getting everybody, you know, just acting more like themselves. And because I think that's kind of when people can kind of break down that barrier and not feel so, you know, not feel like they're in their own little box, you know, when they can feel more like themselves at a gig, that's when, special things can happen, and they can be touched by things, and they can listen to the music on a different kind of, in a different way and stuff like that, rather than just kind of being there drinking their beer. Unless you've had a lot of beers, in which case that seems to work quite well too. But yeah, you know, I really like it when people talk to me and heckle me and, well, you know, hit on me, whatever your mum did, on stage, because that... I like that humanity. It's wonderful. Humanity is an amazing thing.
So I can imagine that you'd like that more than someone to be quiet at your own gig.
Yes, I very much prefer the interaction. However people prefer to experience it in the end is fine, but I don't think about it that much, but I do enjoy it when people get into it. And like in Brisbane, I had people just yelling at me and asking for songs and stuff like that. And that's great. That's fantastic. And means that I don't have to think about my set list quite so much. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, I love it. I think it's great.
Do you have any set preparations or superstitions, things that you have to do before you perform?
Not really. If I do any preparation stuff, it's just generally more to do with just how I'm kind of feeling. Like recently, a lot of the shows I did recently, I was actually had a bit of a flu going on, so I was, you know, of course I was doing all the warm-up stuff, and I do this thing where I chew a lot of gum before I sing, because it kind of gets all the bits and pieces working, you know what I mean?
Yep.
There is a bit of a ritual just involved in, like, you know, putting on the suit, the waistcoat and the suit, getting into the bowler hat, taking my shoes off, all that kind of stuff. And I do have a good hard think about the songs that I'm going to play and how they all work together and things like that before I go on stage, because I certainly like to have some kind of plot laid out before me.
Now, the shoes off. Any particular reason for that?
Oh, partly it's because I kind of like the feeling of carpet under my feet, but since I've been using a stomp box recently, it's just hard to feel it with my shoes on. The stomp box is a bit of a weird thing where it is a stomp box that I bought, but it was a cheap one and it kind of sounded a bit crappy. So I like cut a hole in this book and I stuck the stomp box in the book. And the book is like The Life of Stephen Sondheim or something really bizarre like that. And so I cut a hole in this book and shoved the stomp box in there. And then when I hit it, my foot like kind of lands around it instead of right on top of it. So it sounds much more nice and thuddy and weird. But it means I've got to kind of hit it in a very particular spot most of the time, and if I've got my shoe on, I can't tell where that is. But it does make it difficult sometimes, because especially with the stomp box, in Brisbane I got a bit enthusiastic, and the next day my foot was very was very sore and quite bruised, I think. So I went a little bit overboard, but it is a bit weird kind of walking around in a bar with no shoes on. Kind of makes you realise how much they clean the bar.
Or maybe they don't.
Yeah, well, exactly. But it's I like the freedom of it. I like the freedom of it. Shoes are nothing but a capitalist construct. And, no, that was a joke. I like the freedom of not having any shoes on stage, I guess.
Have you ever changed your set list in reaction to the audience? Has anyone thrown you some weird requests?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you feel that something that you're doing is wrong, then you should definitely take it in a different direction. And there are still shows that I do where I kind of don't do the set list beforehand and stuff like that, and do just try and pick it as to what people are interested in hearing and stuff. And especially because I've got quite a broad repertoire of stuff. I've got so many different songs now, and I've got so many songs that are different, of different vibe, I guess, you know, like songs that are different anyway. So like, you know, if a room is more down, then it's nice to be able to play songs that are more kind of sedate and thoughtful, and vice versa, you know. So it's definitely I always try and take into consideration what's going on around me as well, I suppose. But then, like, to the same degree, I also just try to ignore what's going on and just try and, you know, I'm trying to get across something with what I'm doing. So I try to ignore people, but I ignore it in favour of doing my own, making my own choices and stuff like that.
So that's rather cool. When it comes down to things like that, do you have like a favourite song that you like to start with or you like to finish with?
No, not really. I often think about the set list just in terms of it being a bit of a journey over, because, you know, when you're playing over 45 minutes, I think it's good to, you know, it's like a story, you know, whether the songs themselves kind of are a coherent story or not, like being able to take people on some kind of journey. I know that sounds like a bit of a wanky hippie statement, but being able to kind of lead people along and I really feel like I've come a long way with that as well. You know, being able to structure sets so that the people that are there feel like they're kind of taken on a bit of a journey. So I don't particularly have an order that I definitely do every time or anything like that. And in fact, I probably like changing it a bit just because I'd probably get bored playing the same things over and over again.
Are there any crowd favourites?
Oh, they're all crowd favourites, darling. Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, everybody just loves me. It's hard to believe how much they love me. I think Love is a Cruel Machine always tends to go off very well. Violet the Killjoy has become a popular one. I've been playing a song, and I think I would have played it during Emma's set. I did play it during Emma's last tour, where I played a song called When I Was 17, or When We Were 17, or Jesse, which is a much more kind of dense song. But that's become this very odd favourite. That's one of the ones that got requested in Brisbane. I think there's a few songs like that. The Crashing Down song, that seems to be a big favourite now. So it's nice to get that reaction from people, where people actually remember certain songs and actually want to hear them.
Tell me about my favourite song of yours, which has become a bit of an earworm, Violet the Killjoy. Tell us a bit about that.
Oh, Violet the Killjoy is a song that I wrote because I've over the course of my short lifetime I've been punched in the face very randomly by strangers a couple of times, and without any provocation that I know of, but in fact, the first time some guy just completely walked out of, I think he walked out of a veterinarian's as I was walking up to I was going up to the train to go to a job interview, and this chap walked out of the veterinarian's and just started punching me around the head, and I think he hit me kind of four or five times and then kind of ran away, and I was just very dazed and obviously didn't get the job, but that song is largely about that. And more about that feeling after that I was concerned about all the nasty things and nasty people in the world and lying in bed that night going, what if somebody's outside, and you know, so that song is about that stuff. And I guess Violet the Killjoy, that part of it is the personification of all those feelings. Violet is the nasty little bastard waiting outside the door, ready to punch me in the face again.
I opened the door and was sure there was somebody there. Oh, and Violet the Killjoy was hiding and waiting to take. With my back to the wall, no, I shot like a thrill, ran riot until it had faded. It had faded, but I wanted you to save me from the outside in. I wanted you to save me from the outside in. Save me from the outside. But what was outside? But what was out came in. Father the Killjoy emerged from a place in the night. Whoa. And cut like a spark with the flash through the dark as it faded. mark with the tick of the clock as it breaks me. As it breaks me. I wanted you to save me from the outside in. I wanted you to save me from the outside in. I wanted you to save me from the outside. But what was outside? But what was out came in. I'm afraid you left me alone. You left me alone with this. I'm shaking, I'm shaking. I'm afraid you left me alone. You left me alone with this. I'm shaking, I'm shaking. I'm afraid you left me alone. You left me alone with this. I'm shaking, I'm shaking. I'm lost in, I'm violent. I said, I wanted you to save me from the outside in. I wanted you to save me from the outside in. I wanted you to save me from the outside in. I wanted you to save me from the outside in. I wanted you to save me from the outside in. I wanted you to save me from the outside in. I wanted you to save me from the outside. But what was outside? But what was out came in.
Is it hard being 6 foot three in like say Sydney, for instance? Do you tend to stand out?
Most of the time, no. Most of the time, it's great actually, because I'm tall. People tend to leave me alone. I think in most respects, like it's good. It's not that much of a problem. I have more problems just in houses, because generally houses are made for people that are about kind of 5'9" or 5'10" or something. And so it's houses are always very awkward for me. And I didn't kind of realize how weird they were until I went to a friend's house, and the house had specifically been built for someone who was, I think, 6'4" or 6'5" or something. So a little bit taller than me even. But everything was amazing. Everything was like right in the right spot, and I didn't hit my head on anything. I didn't have to think about ducking when I went through any doorways or anything. And it was amazing. So in general, being tall is not a problem at all, except in tiny houses.
And it certainly helps you stand out on stage, especially if it's a smaller stage like at El Rocco's.
Yeah, well, that's true. It's it does help in that respect. I've been sitting down a lot, so it's often a shock when I finish a set and stand up because I'm much taller than when I sit down. But it was actually a concern when I was a young lad because I've pretty much been this tall since I was like 14, and it was as you do when you're a teenager. It just made me feel like a complete freak, so I was very, very grateful when I pretty much stopped growing at 14.
Wow. So you've been, you were saying earlier that you grew up on a farm in Queensland and that you studied in Brisbane. How would you compare Sydney and Brisbane, especially with their music scenes?
They're both really great. It's, very, very different, of course, and they both go through. It's interesting how they both go through patches. Where I know Sydney a few years ago went through a bit of a patch where there was not a lot of venues around, and then they've changed a few kind of laws about the bars and things recently. So there's so all these little bars can open up, and then suddenly there's a lot more venues around here. And in Brisbane, they were having trouble a while ago because of liquor licensing, noise levels, and stuff. And then they've changed a bunch of things. And so it's always. I mean, both of them seem really up and down. I think the big thing about Sydney is that there's these very kind of obvious cultural areas around the town, and which Brisbane doesn't have so much. But then I think that's kind of part of the thing that gives Sydney that kind of sense of like tension a lot of the time. Like not because there's tension between the cultural groups, but just because there's like obvious big changes between the areas of Sydney, and people are very people are very protective of their personal little areas in Sydney, whereas in Brisbane it doesn't tend to be that as much, but I think that's what kind of tends to give the whole city a very laid back environment, and the whole place is such a nice laid back place. So that's probably reflective of the differences in the music scene as well. That like the Brisbane music scene is tends to be laid back and a lot more kind of focused on indie rock kind of thing, I guess. Whereas Sydney, it's a lot more, seems to be a lot more, just because there's more people here, there's kind of more action around, a lot more genres, I suppose, but then there's also a lot more kind of ambitious people.
So is there anybody who you're following musically at the moment?
In general, in the world?
I
tend not to kind of follow bands completely so much myself all the time, because I don't particularly like, there's not lots of bands where I like all of their stuff, so bands don't kind of like, there's bands where I really love particular songs and stuff, but I guess like lately I've been listening to a lot of Anthony and the Johnsons, because he's really does some really amazing music and writes about such interesting things. I recently discovered a band from the US called Wolf Parade, and they're very cool. Kind of do a bit of a David Bowie-ish thing themselves, which is kind of cool. There's musicians down here that I've gotten to know, and of course I love Susie Connolly's music, who I've been playing with recently, and. Sam Buckingham is another musician that I've been that I've done the gig in Sydney with, and she's fantastic. And Emily Davis in Adelaide is another person I've done a gig with recently, and she's doing a really wonderful kind of cabaret country weirdness thing these days, which is fantastic. I don't know. I haven't really been paying heaps of attention to newer stuff of late, just because I've been so busy. I've been listening to a lot of Radiohead.
Yep.
Radiohead, and I've been trying to get into the Beatles, but I've never really been a big fan of the Beatles. So I haven't done a good job with them. But, listening to a lot of Radiohead, a lot of Tom Waits, that sort of stuff, really.
So a couple of now standard IrkFM questions.
Oh, yes.
Yes, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you're asleep, and you come up with a really good idea for a song. What does Franz Arp do?
Oh, Franz Arp jumps out of bed and puts it down. I have done that once before, and I literally just kind of got up and stumbled through the house and smashed it down I can't remember what I had at the time, on my mobile phone or something. And then that later became a song. But I think I do whatever I normally do. Just jump out of bed, stumble through the house in whatever I'm wearing or not wearing, and just put up with the shame of it.
We've had some interesting answers. You don't have something beside the bed just in case?
You don't want to hear anything. You don't want to hear about anything that's just beside my bed. Believe me. That's all personal stuff. No, that's joking. I know I don't have anything but my phone.
Yeah.
And a ukulele. So I'd probably grab the ukulele first at the moment, because it's easier to get out than my guitar.
No, that's cool.
Yeah. The scarier thing more is when I come up with an idea where I'm driving around. that's always a bit scarier, because I've. You know, trying to like sing and remember the song whilst trying to like get my phone out of my pocket, and then like trying to get through all my apps to find the thing that I record on, and then like, you know, all the while continuing to not crash and die. So that tends to be the more touch and go time for an idea to come for me personally.
Because of course, not crashing and dying is something that we want to encourage.
Well, it's one of my goals in life, really.
Not to die.
To not crash and die. And maintain that until something else causes me to die. So I'll be working on that, and I'll let you know how that goes.
Because you don't want to be remembered as that guy who crashed and burned while he was trying to write a song.
Yeah, well, exactly. Unless I'm really big and famous by then, and, you know, do the kind of Buddy Holly style, like, going out in flames thing. But even then, I think I'd prefer to not do that. But it would be nice to, if it does have to happen, it would be nice for it to happen in that way of like, oh, he's gone too early, but he's left such a wonderful legacy.
He died loving what he did best.
Yes, exactly. He died at the peak of his game. With wonderful music in his wake and potentially pregnant women or something like that, I don't know. I'm not planning on crashing and dying anytime soon. So let's keep our fingers crossed for that. Awesome. To be maintained.
Awesome. So tell us about your latest album, What Strange Machines.
The latest album is... it was several... decisions at once. It was I very much decided to focus my songwriting on the particularly kind of odder end of the spectrum of the stuff that I do, and I also decided to that I was going to record it all at home and mix it all at home, except for a couple of little bits. But so it was all done in my house and all recorded in my house and done very fast as well. I was very much kind of recording things as I was writing them, and a lot of the time I'd have the music down before I'd have a lot of the lyrics finished, and then I'd go back and rewrite the lyrics several times, and then it's been really well received in a lot of places. I haven't been fortunate enough to get any Triple J airplay as yet, but I've been getting quite a bit of airplay on other internet radio stations all over the world, which has been great, and getting so much really, really favourable feedback, and, you know, it's all been just onwards and upwards and with the whole thing, really.
Now, if I didn't know, you'd think that was recorded in an actual studio rather than just at home. What did you use to record?
I just have a Pro Tools system. I've got these very nice preamps that I bought off a chap called Joe Malone in Brisbane. And aside from that, I pretty much just used an SM, or well, a Beta 58 for nearly everything, I think. Some of the drums were recorded in a studio that I used to work at in Brisbane, and I think some of the piano was done at the old museum in Brisbane. But aside from that, it was all vocals and guitars and violins, and a lot of the other drums and percussion stuff was all just done in the various lounge rooms I've lived in the last few years. Actually, not even that long in the last. In the 12 months over the time I was doing little recordings for it and stuff. So, and then it was all mixed in my house.
Did you have any help with the instruments, or it's all you?
The drums are Tony Dean. Three of the tracks are Tony Dean, and then three of the tracks are Tony Dean, and then any other drums on there are mostly me. Seamus Kirkpatrick. Played some of the bass tracks and also the clarinet on Vagina Removal, and Emma Dean did she played all the violins and did some of the backing vocal stuff as well.
So, seeing as though you mentioned the V word, you had some trouble with iTunes.
Yeah. Well, it was. I don't know if they thought it was trouble because they never responded to me, but they, of course, the song is called Vagina Removal in brackets, the latest fashion. And it's, the reason why I called it that, because, like, it's funny because, of course, because I said vagina in it, everyone's like, oh, that's vulgar. But it was this thing where, like, I wrote the song for a show and it had the word vagina in it. And then because the show was going to be performed in front of some school kids, the people that were doing it were like, oh my God, I don't know if we can say vagina in front of school kids. And I was pretty annoyed about it, because as if you can't say vagina in front of school kids, that's ridiculous. And so I cut it out, but then I called the song Vagina Removal, and everybody thought that was appropriate because they didn't actually have to say the name of the song in front of the children. So, and I kind of got my own back. And then, so when I put it up on iTunes, and iTunes just kind of nominally have a bunch of words that they must have some, they must have something where it just censors words of anything. And so they just nominally censored vagina, just as a word. I was pretty ropeable about it. So I, but it pretty much I sent off all of these letters and complaints to them and to the digital distributor I was using, and the which is TuneCore. And TuneCore, bless them, got back to me a couple of times and apparently forwarded on one of my slightly less heated emails to the iTunes. But I certainly never heard back from iTunes. But then I started a Facebook fan page called Vagina Is Not a Swear Word. And last count, I think it had about 830 or 40 people on it or something like that. It might have gone down or up because I haven't actually looked at it as much as I should be. But it's, I was trying to kind of get a bunch of people behind my cause so that I could go to iTunes and say, look, all these people think you're ridiculous. And anyway, I haven't done it yet. But I think it's crazy. And iTunes, like, all their rules, all their censorship rules are just so kind of weird. And nominal, and I don't really understand it.
Now, if you had have known about it yourself, you might have been able to do it in a creative sort of way, using like hashtags, exclamation marks, percentage signs, and all of this sort of stuff.
No way, fuck that. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, vagina is totally not a swear word. It's I'm not going to cover it up just because they don't want to censor it. Like, I've uploaded it on other places, and I actually just uploaded all my music to this wonderful Australian-only kind of style of iTunes called I Hear Music, and they only have Australian music, and they wrote to me specifically to tell me that they weren't going to censor vagina when they put it up there, which I thought was great. But I just think it's ridiculous. Like, I wouldn't try to censor vagina just to make up for the fact that someone's going to be a twat about it. It's stupid.
So you've had some good reactions from the song?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, people like the song because it's like, in itself, for the song, it's just a crazy little song. The song itself is, again, I can't decide exactly how, it all just fits together so ironically, because the song is also about somebody who, starts changing everything about themselves because of all the stuff around them, and end up, you know, going and seeing a plastic surgeon, and the plastic surgeon cuts away everything about them that's unique until all that's left of them is just their face, and then at that point they kind of realize that they've, well, fucked up, quite frankly. And so it's and just all of this has been very poignant, that like the song is about that, and then these people didn't want me to use the word vagina, and then iTunes has censored vagina, and it's just this constant, you know, ridiculousness. People have liked the song, and then there's been a whole bunch of people that have become interested in the song because of this whole kind of, me jumping up and down about the controversy of it all.
So iTunes is the only place that's kicked up a stink? There's been no others?
No, as far as I can tell, nowhere else has done it, and I haven't seen any, TuneCore has distributed it to like most of the major digital downloaders, and I haven't seen it censored anywhere else. So, I think there was one other place. I think maybe eMusic censored it or something like that. I can't remember. But certainly Amazon and Napster and most of those certainly didn't censor it. So it's, bloody iTunes.
Yeah.
Damn it, iTunes.
What about radio? What would they do?
I know a few. It actually got a little bit of airplay on PBS in Melbourne, and some on FBI here in Sydney, and various things. So I don't know. I didn't actually hear the airplay, so I don't know if they if they announced the name or if they had a giggle about the name or what. But I guess that in terms of it being a single on, say, like, you know, Nova or commercial radio, then they might not have played a song called Vagina Removal. But then, you know, the song was never aimed at being that. Like, if I was trying to, I mean, you know, mostly my career is not aimed at being something like that. So I really don't think that, I think that you know, radio stations that would play that kind of music probably wouldn't care in the end.
It started off as a question in her head, but the question was a canter and it spread to the kidneys, lungs, and finally to her heart. To the president, you've got moments to live. So the plastic surgeon cut away her arm, stuck a hand in her vein, and he cut as the doctor amputated to the base of her neck. Said, hey, thank God we might have saved you. But there's an irritation, I'm just an imitation, left over reputation. Then if the night is fashion, I left a walking pool, fix that and take you down. If you fall behind, it's really wrong. That from do we all fall down? Then I'll make you pay, I'll make you pay.
If hypothetically you were aiming a song of yours at radio, what song would you push in their direction?
Oh, at what, commercial radio?
Yeah.
Jeez. I guess maybe that Crashing Down tune, I guess. It's kind of a bit more like a rock song, I guess. Or actually, there was a lot of people that really loved the You're a Shooting Star tune on What Strange Machines. And it's definitely kind of a little bit more straight ahead than some of the other ones, I guess. So yeah, probably You're a Shooting Star.
So how did you feel when you held the CD for the very first time?
Oh, great. It was, really fantastic. And because it was such an exciting process, the whole thing, it really has felt like probably the most personal collection of stuff that I've done. And I did all the artwork and everything myself as well on the CD, and so it was really it was really fantastic to get it back and see the whole package and see the music and everything, listen to the music and have that all finished, but then have the whole thing, because it really was my project. I really did all the artwork, everything. I did everything on it, and all the people that I worked with are all people that I loved dearly. So it was, it was really a very personal thing for me.
Well, that's the advantage that you've got in this current day and age. The more you can do yourself, the cheaper it is and the easier it is compared to if you have to outsource these things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, absolutely. And especially in terms of the actual kind of production part of stuff, like, it is very easy to create and make the whole thing part of the creative process. And it's still, I mean, it's in a way, it's still as hard as ever once you've got the CD, it's almost as hard as ever to get it out there and get it in front of new people. And that's kind of always either a slow or expensive process. You know, it seems to be one or the other. But the actual ability to create stuff is and be involved in every step of the creation process is amazing, and again I've got a good understanding of audio engineering, and I've worked on a lot of people's other people's CDs and things like that. So it's a great place to be in, because I can work on my own music so easily, and it's great.
Do you find that you'd be harder on yourself than if it was someone else that you were doing?
Oh, I'm desperately hard on myself. I often really crave that criticism from other people as well. I more so than, you know, having somebody tell me that they think it's, especially in the process where I'm, you know, writing or recording, or I'm often really desperate just to hear what the bad stuff that people think about it, so I can work on that stuff, you know, and really do. I work on my songs a lot, rewrite the songs, and, you know, try so much different stuff with them, and rewrite the lyrics, and really work on them hard, and put a lot of it's pretty rare that I just sit down and write a song, and it's, you know, it happens quickly, and the way it first happens is the way it ends up, you know. It's that very rarely happens for me personally. So it is a big process, and I am very, very hard on myself about it.
So if current day Franz had the ability to go back in time and see his former self as like a young child or whatever, what advice, with your experience that you've got now, what would you tell yourself?
Don't masturbate so much. Leave the girls alone. No, I wouldn't change the amount of girls anyway. Sorry. I don't know. I don't know if I'd... I don't know, I've always been pretty... I don't think I ever look back on anything that I've done and think I've... Because I always try and do things that are honest, and everything I've done up till this point has always felt very honest, and even if it's not as executed as well as I could, as well as it is now, or, you know, it's not as good because I was younger or less experienced, or, you know, didn't know as much or didn't know as many people, like, it's always been you know, a step in the path, and I don't know if I'd really tell myself anything. Pat myself on the head. Well done, boy.
What about someone who's new in the music industry? What would you have any advice to them?
I think so. I think just to really decide what your goal is early on, and try and work towards that. And just because you decide on a goal doesn't mean you can't change your goal along the way, or alter the, you know, alter the specifics of the goal. But I think it's important to always have something in sight that you're working on, because it's, I think the biggest killer is just when you are, when you're either not realistic about what you're doing, or, you know, musicians that, like, write these crazy out there songs, but then get horribly disappointed when they don't get on commercial radio or something like that, you know. Like, I think it's so important to if you're aiming to get on commercial radio, then that's, you know, that's a consideration kind of thing. And if you're aiming to do a particular thing, then you need to take into account what you're actually doing as well, you know. Like, having a goal and understanding what it is that you're actually aiming for.
So what are you aiming for?
My goals are very much related in terms of just continuing to develop as a songwriter, and just keeping on getting it out there, and finding people that like what I do. Like, I've always been happy with the way I write, and I'm always trying to do different things, and I'm always trying to get better. And because I, like, even though I really like the album that I've just done, like, I really feel like there's, you know, so much further to go. And so that's really my main goal, is just to be really good, and just to keep on trying to be really good. Like, you know, hopefully one day be undeniably good. It doesn't really matter what I write, people can recognize that it's just really good. And I think, you know, that's my aim, really, just to keep on becoming better as a musician and a writer.
So we mentioned the gig that's coming up basically straight after this episode comes out in Sydney on the 6th of November. Anything else excellent coming up for you?
There's a few things. I'm like starting to plan some shows for early next year. Hopefully playing with a few other songwriters. Maybe in February, but that's still in planning stage. And I've just started. I've got a bunch of songs, and I really want to put out. So I've been even though What Strange Machines is from this year, I'm started working on a new recording as well, and I'm kind of hoping to get out before the end of the year. At the moment, it's called Crowded Shadows, and it's probably going to be a bit more of a stripped back, kind of very much darker set of songs. But I pretty much the aim is just to keep on going, really, just keep on working I'll probably keep on organising tours and stuff once every few months just keep on writing and keep on putting things out.
Where's the best place do you think you've toured?
The best place? All my tours have always been. I haven't really played outside of Australia, but I mean, you know, there's always shows that are really great. Well, the show that I just recently did in Brisbane at Rick's was like an amazing show. I don't know. Like there's a show in nearly every city. The show that I did in Melbourne the tour that I did with Emma Dean was a really great show for me as well, and really 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 well received. And in fact, that whole tour was a really great tour for me in terms of the shows that I was doing. And because the Brisbane one and the Sydney ones were both great. I don't know. I kind of can't really narrow down, because my shows are always such a personal experience for me. I think I kind of always judge my own.
Yep.
What I bring to them more than what the place brings to it, if you know what I mean.
Yep. So, Franz, it's been an absolute pleasure. Where's the best place that people can interact with you on the interweb?
On the interweb, they can go to my website, which is franzarp.com. Or they can, of course, I've got all the usual places. You can search for me on Facebook and all that sort of stuff. But it's on Facebook, it's, you know, facebook.com/franzarp or any variation upon that for any of the other websites.
So you haven't bumped into any other Franz Arps? I suppose that's an advantage.
No. No, I haven't bumped into any other ones yet. Somebody called ARP just joined my page the other day, which is funny. But I haven't bumped into any other Franz ARPs at all, which is good.
Certainly makes things a lot easier, because as we've said to other artists, if you've got a more common name, it can be more difficult for you to grab the same name.
It can absolutely be more difficult, and you can run into situations where people with the same name get more famous than you or something like that, or just difficulty with, you know, with all the usual stuff, I guess, like registering websites and crap like that. Or, you know, if somebody else by the same name has done something crazy in the world, then, you know, it can be a bit weird. So yeah, no, it's good.
Absolutely. So thank you, Franz, it's been great.
No worries, thank you, Urk.
That's a pleasure. This has been Urk FM episode 190, and don't forget to stay tuned to Channel Urk. Lots of great things, and needless to say, Franz will be in touch.
Indeed.
Good night, interweb. I'll just...